Okay. Paper 117, section 4, which is old single column, page 1283. Okay, so this is a fascinating section. It's got a lot of soaring passages in it. It strikes me that they're wanting us to step back just a little bit in the midst of grinding your way through, trying to understand all the complexity. Just step back for a moment and survey the landscape, if you will. Try to see if the Revelators, I think, are trying to encourage us to see if you can really begin to get this new perspective, forming a clearer backdrop, against which you view your life and just all of the events of the past, present, and future, to try to really establish, this whole new understanding of God. Get that if you just reflect on why would they title this section The Finite God? There's a challenge just right in the title to come to terms with. To allow the word finite and the word God to be juxtaposed without invoking some simplistic anthropomorphic notion. I mean, we've talked about that many times, that the history of mankind is filled with all kinds of tiny God notions, very finite gods, and gods that are just barely, if any, greater than the humans conceiving of, the deity. So, I want to remind you, they've been challenging us. We've pointed out how they've been challenging us up to get up to this point, with taking some of our favorite words, truth, beauty, goodness, love, and saying, well, most literally, in any way that a finite being can actually conceive or engage such notions, that's the supreme being. That's the supreme truth, beauty, and goodness, and the supreme being, and love. And, we mentioned how that's initially a little unsettling to do that, and then they did it just right before they got here. They took one of those favorite little Bible quotes, live, move, and have our being, and they attached it to the Supreme instead of the Father. So that's the pretext that's coming in, and you'll see at the beginning of this section, that's definitely what they wanted you to have in mind as you entered this section. To really see if you can see yourself in a whole new relationship with God, and do two things in the process. One, make the infinite God truly infinite for the first time, and then add a whole new dimension to deity and to God in the process. You actually allow the infinite to be infinite. And yet God to not be consequently absolutely disconnected from you and irrelevant. To fill in that space between the infinite level and where you are with real deity instead of just wishful thinking and magical notions. All right, who would like to do some reading for us here? You want to read? Okay.
For the finite God, as we view the ceaseless struggles of the creature creation for perfection of status and divinity of being, we cannot but believe that these unending efforts bespeak the unceasing struggle of the Supreme for divine self-realization. God the Supreme is the finite deity, and he must cope with the problems of the finite in the total sense of that word. Our struggles with the vicissitudes of time in the evolutions of space are reflections of his efforts to achieve reality of self and completion of sovereignty within the sphere of action which his evolving nature is expanding to the outermost limits of possibility.
Okay. So in that first one, see how they're using the same words for you and God. As we view the ceaseless struggles of the creatures struggling, okay, but God struggling. The notion of the infinite, absolutely perfect God struggling is nonsensical. So if you think about it, if all there was the infinite, absolutely perfect God, it would be impossible for you to experience struggle. Where would that come from? You know, everything has to come from God, deity, everything. You know, if you experience separation, there's a source of separation. You know, anything you can think of, there has to be a source for it. It doesn't just come out of nowhere. So, you know, this is what they're trying to get us to understand. You know, this is the big difference between an existential God and then a bunch of magic to relate that existential God to you, and you know, having the existential God, but having an experiential God, so that there's a source for your experiential life, including vicissitudes and evolution and struggles and what have you. So, obviously, when you really start to reflect on this, it's all the more important that you understand the truth about the domain that you live in. You don't live in an imperfect domain. You live in a perfecting domain. That's the truth of where you live. If the truth of it was that it was an imperfect domain, then that would be the truth of God. You know, God would be a negative phenomenon. And he wouldn't be a source for anything. You know, that imperfection would have to come from the source of imperfection, which means the source would be a nothing, which means it can't be a source. So the whole thing is illogical. So this is really where they're trying to get you to step back, see a little bit, and really begin to reflect on yourself in this new context and begin to appreciate how wonderful it is to have a way to finally understand your struggles as not being just some sort of strange, arbitrary imposition of hardship while God sits there on his lounge chair and laughs it up, you know, because he's perfect and everything's perfect around him. And, you know, that old notion of God has just always been fraught with all kinds of complications. You have to come up with some vast rationalization scheme about why he doesn't love you anymore, or, you know, or why he never loved you, or whatever, you know. Try to rationalize that. So that's where we are here.
Throughout the grand universe, the Supreme struggles for expression. His divine evolution is in measure predicated on the wisdom action of every personality in existence. When a human being chooses eternal survival, he is co-creating destiny. And in the life of this ascending mortal, the finite God finds an increased measure personality self-realization, and an enlargement of experiential sovereignty. But if a creature rejects the eternal career, that part of the Supreme which was dependent on this creature's choice experiences inescapable delay, a deprivation which must be compensated by substitutional or collateral experience. As for the personality of the non-survivor, it is absorbed into the oversoul of creation, becoming a part of the deity of the Supreme.
Okay, before we talk about that last part, just see how, they start the paragraph out with, oh, by the way, did you notice we used the word struggle in the previous paragraph? To just repeat it again, try to drive it home. And to very, carefully think about the subtle challenges in the passing, that you have in passing here. His divine evolution is in measure predicated on the wisdom action of every personality in existence. So if you have reflected on felt an affinity to the notion that you have this linkage, the acts are the consequences, God's, I get tingly when I think about that. I like that notion that there's this linkage. But there's facts in play. His divine evolution is not predicated on the ignorant action. The ignorance action, to be directly parallel about their construct, of every personality in existence. It has to be wisdom action. You have to have faced facts, adjusted them to ideals, achieved wisdom, and then acted upon that wisdom. You have to be functioning as a personality who has consecrated their mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother. There has to be wisdom, true wisdom, in order for this to come about. And you'll see this builds. You'll see how they build this point I've been making so often as we go through these next two sections about this twofold consecration. They're going to try to really drive home that point now, because they feel you should have really kind of come to terms with, you have this experiential deity that you've just never thought about before. You've tried it, that whole attempt to predicate everything on just an existential deity and a relationship to existential deity. It's now time to bring in the other part of the picture and to understand how critical this distinction is, vital, how critical that is. It seems subtle here, but you'll see. It's just it's the beginning of a real point that they're going to try to drive home. Now, this is one of those definitive spots where they bring up this whole issue of, what if an individual chooses iniquity? How does that work? You've got this very direct statement here. That personality doesn't just vanish. That would be illogical. It comes from the first source and center of all things and beings. Nothing is going to make it disappear. It's immutable, absolutely immutable. So if it's not going to be identifying with that self and the energy system of that self that it was identified with, it has to establish a new seat of identity. And so that purposing, that was purposing at that identity point, is now going to be purposing at another identity point. And where is it? Basically, if you take it all the way to the complete, it's part of the personality of the Supreme Being. They're kind of reminding you of taking it to that point by using the Oversoul reference there, like we've been pointing out, that the direct understanding of that parallel between your soul and something that you would call an Oversoul is not really to the Supreme or the Universal Mother or the Almighty Supreme. It's to that which is transcendent of the sphere of the total finite, the Supreme Being, just like your soul is transcendent of the sphere of your material self.
at one part in the book, they they say that from the universe point of view, there's only two categories of people, those who know God and those who don't. And I'm wondering, from the Supreme's point of view, may be that there's two kinds of mortals, those who survive and those who don't. Based on this sentence here where, you know, every survivor accelerates the Supreme and every non-survivor throws in a delay and has to wait for a purposing of another personality to fill that spot.
Yeah, and before we totally discuss that thought, you know, wait and see here just real quickly. What they bring another little interesting point into that discussion. And we'll spend some time talking about that. I'd like to have that, you know, passage in front of us before we totally, you know, flesh out that idea of it.
I read this today, and when it said that, you know, what he was talking about, the delay,
right,
must be the deprivation which must be compensated.
Right.
I went back and found, what of Amidon of Urantia? Does he still stand unmoved? So during the Lucifer Rebellion, I won't read the whole thing here, but this key sentence just gets me every time. And let me assure you, this has already done more good in the universe of Nevadon and the super universe of Orvantan than can ever be outweighed by the sum total of all the evil and sorrow of the Lucifer Rebellion. Mm-hmm. So talk about compensation. Amidon, he personally took care of a lot of that. I mean, I'm not exactly sure if that's true, but that it feels like that. That in the face of, which is that wonderful clause that they use so much, you know, with the inevitabilities, etc. In the face of the difficulties, then we rise to the occasion. We acquire qualities. We cooperate with our thought adjuster, et cetera, et cetera. And for those people, and I'm still one of those who believe that it's not a very high number, who say, just throw in the towel and say, I don't want to continue, then, you know, people like Amidon really take up the slack.
Yeah, and you know, maybe just a way of thinking about choosing your words and expressing your thought there. You don't know what was said there experientially to be a fact. You have directly experienced that fact, that he did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But when you read it, your truth detector goes off.
Oh,
it rings true. Right. See? You know, and it's a good example of you know, taking delight in cultivating, being able to distinguish that truth detector voice from delusional voices, and grabbing a hold of the certitude that's attached to that truth response, yeah. Or, you know, along with the Holy Spirit, your full reality response.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, Chris.
Okay. Yeah.
So here in the last part, you know, when he says it absorbed,
right,
the over control. I'm picturing that, is that kind of like, just doesn't really exist anymore, but what was there kind of is there in the somewhere in the mind of the Supreme or whatever, but that personality or that the livelihood, the life of that personality is not existent anymore.
Well, it's just, again, you got to let the word personality, you know, be the Urantia definition,
right,
you know.
Which is
so it's the, you know, it's not a thing at all. Personality is not a thing in any way, shape, or form.
It's you.
It's a, no, yeah, it's not. It's yourself is you. See, your personality is the purposing of yourself. The self is the thing.
But it's the changeless
form. Right. See, but that purposing is changeless. You know, there's a purposing, there's a pattern that's working to impose itself on your emerging self. And if they're going to go on talking. Let's don't go off too far, because just like I said to Michael, but you know, they're going to build on this so that we can talk about it a little more completely. But definitely, you know, just recognize that what we're talking about transferring is not a thing. It's a measure of the total purposing of infinity. You were given a little part of the totality of all purposing of infinity. That's right now it's seated on that identity point right there. If you choose iniquity, that purposing is not superfluous in any way. It's an absolutely immutable part of the totality of all purposing. It must continue to purpose, everything would just cease to exist. So all it has to do is just have a new identity point via which to express. And that identity point is the selfhood of the Supreme.
But it's not, so for instance, if we recognize each other's personality as two friends and continue to go on and do that, we don't necessarily recognize that personality in the Supreme, do you think, as one that was
absorbed, what does the word absorbed imply? Okay, he's not going to be a schizophrenic, multi-personality syndrome, literally now instead of, of course that's, actually a multiple self, but they use that term multiple personalities. I mean, that's not what we're talking about. Something where he's got this little chunk here and it behaves like that bizarre Lucifer guy and he's got, it's not going to be like that. It's absorbed. And let's just, before I say anything else, let's get a little bit further.
Can I ask another question?
Okay, yeah. Sure.
So the two paragraphs up, one paragraph up, his divine evolution is in measure predicated on the wisdom action of every personality in existence. Is that in context there as every personality in the grand universe? Because, it wouldn't be predicated on the Havona natives.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All experiencing, that is associable with the Supreme.
So the experiencing of the sun.
Now remember, we talked about last time, there's some experiencing that's not directly associable to the Supreme, but that experiencing by the Havana natives is not part of that.
Yeah.
Creature trinitized sons, especially the trinitized sons of destiny, okay, that's a separate matter. But all of that phenomenon of, again, just beginning to appreciate all the more that what's going on in Havona is in many ways a direct reciprocal of what's going on out here. They're very definitely linked, our experiences and their experiences. All of us are going to transcend to a whole new domain, experiential domain, when the finite is transcended.
The Havona natives.
Yeah, the Havona natives too.
God is so trusting, so loving, that he gives a portion of his divine nature into the hands of even human beings for safekeeping and self-realization. The Father nature, the adjuster presence, is indestructible regardless of the choice of the mortal being. The child of the Supreme, the evolving self, can be destroyed, notwithstanding that the potentially unifying personality of such a misguided self will persist as a factor of the deity of supremacy.
Okay, so you said that again, they're stressing the difference between self and personality. You have to completely get that in order to make sense out of these issues. And part of it is what I was just trying to stress. You go back to some of the most fundamental definitions of personality that you can give. There's probably nothing more fundamental than linking the word purpose to personality. The personal purposive aspect. So when you think about going to the first Magian world, meeting someone that you knew here, and recognizing that person, okay, the self, like especially let's say that both of you are spirit fused mortals. So you know there wasn't any memories that and yet still there could be a personality connection. What on earth is it that you're keying in on and recognizing? If by and large the characteristics of self that right now are so immediately apparent, and I go, oh yeah, that's right, yeah, Chris looks like that, and you know, and things like that, and whatnot. If those aren't there, the more attuned I get to personality rather than just the character or even the temperament, even lesser to a lesser degree, the temperament of the self, the more I can see Chris's purposing. I can begin to see the part of infinity that God gave him to do. I can see the part of him that's going to be still doing that even when everything is completely different, you know. Even when we've transcended the finite, it's like he's still going to be purposing just like that, even when all the facts have changed.
You're a better man than me.
This is, but see, the key.
I see that in myself.
Of course you don't, and that's what you're supposed to recognize. That's what they're trying to get us to. Oh, in other words, most of what I recognize in my, even myself, is not my personality. It's myself. It's self. Recognition. To be able to get to the point where you can recognize your personality is to see, because I have a personality, I can step back and look at myself and recognize it. But to recognize your personality, you've got to somehow be able to take an even further step back. Okay, so how do I do that? I'm going to have to begin to be able to somehow kind of stand where the Supreme Being is standing right now, in a measure transcendent of the finite, to begin to be able to see my finite personality function a little bit. Well, it's like, well, that's impossible. Wait a minute. They told me my personality even now has 7 dimensions. 3 finite, 3 absonite, 1 absolute. Even now, you can begin. It's going to be extremely vague and tenuous to start with. But even now, you can begin to have a little bit of an absonite personality perspective on your finite personality dimensionality. You will begin to see that personality functioning in the finite. Okay? This is what they're trying to get us to understand, is the personality comes from a point in the deity picture that's behind the Universal Father. It comes from a point higher than the Universal Father. It comes from the first source, the Infinite One, above the Universal Father. It's extremely transcendent. And every effort that you can make to call the things that you're currently calling personality what they actually are, like genetic temperament or self-character or whatnot, the more you're going to begin to actually recognize who the Universal Father is. Like I was saying, he's this infinite God. You know, it is so far beyond what we initially want to make God. That's what they're trying to get at.
The key point is as far as what can and cannot be destroyed. The personality cannot be destroyed.
Right.
I mean, it's from the Father.
Right.
So then that helps me clarify it, mm-hmm. is that there's a demarcation. You know, I can sin and I can do all kinds of things and I can destroy my soul and myself. But my personality, to me, that's the big separation.
Yeah, and just picture that picture I was just painting there. You know, we can now think about this because we went through total deity. That whole thing, okay, my personality is bestowed by the Universal Father. Now picture that literally. Okay, here's the Universal Father standing, and he's looking out to the bestowal point. And he reaches back behind him in his quiver, okay? And he pulls out a measure. He individuates a portion of the will and that reservoir of total will that's at his back, you know, and he bestows it, you know, in the personality circuit. Okay? It's very literally what he's doing. Okay?
But they're all different.
And everyone is absolutely unique because, you know, every time he reaches back,
it's a new one.
It's a new one.
Right. But it's not random.
He puts this out, and that's out there now. You know, everything out, you know, in the quiver is something different than what he put out there. So every time he dips in, it's going to be absolutely unique.
It's unique, but it's not random.
I mean, yeah, of course, person, yeah, yeah. And it takes
time and place.
Right, and it takes infinity and eternity into perspective when he reaches in and grabs, you know, that
but
measure.
Grand Fonda, that was, you know, a long time ago.
Okay, wait, Rebecca.
Chris, so what you're saying is I think we can all recognize something in people that remains the same. I mean, and I've always thought that what I was recognizing was personality, but perhaps you're saying it's self, and maybe that's what it is. But it never changes because you know this person at age 50 will have that same essence that you recognized when he was a child.
Right, and all
is
I'm
that self?
Yeah, see, and all I'm saying is, you know it's going to be like that. You know it's going to be changeless. So you look for something that seems to be the most changeless thing. It's like, well, maybe that's personality. Let's start with it. You know, let's put a tentative hypothesis in play. You know, your viewpoint of reality expands, and slowly over time, wait a minute, that actually is changing, isn't it? Now that I see it out over a million year time span, that thing that I thought was the changeless thing is changing. Oh, the personality is something. Oh, it's that thing that's not changing behind it. Mm-hmm. This is what you want to challenge yourself to do, is always recognize you're trying to penetrate deeper and deeper. Obviously, at any given point, when you look at as far as deep as you can penetrate with your insight, you know, you penetrate to the deepest depth that you can see. And what you're going to find is going to appear to be changeless. And it appears to be changeless because you know, not because you know with absolute certainty that is it. That is the absolute essence of that personality right there. But you know that the only reason it has the potential to even appear to be changeless is because there is something that literally is changeless that's behind it all. And that's the beauty, no matter... Until even when your insight penetrates all the way, literally, to the universal Father, you know, at the end of everything, it's even behind that.
But the perception is real about the change.
Right. Yeah. See the
perception. The perception.
But just always challenge yourself to be seeing if you can see even more deeply, and discover, oh wow, that's a whole part of reality I never even realized was there. And personality is behind that. That's what we're doing right here, the way I prefaced this, to really begin to discover that so much of what we're calling the Universal Father is the Supreme Being. It appears to be the Universal Father, but, you know, no matter how much you attempt to discern it, it's like, no, it is the Universal Father. It's not the Supreme Being. They're saying, that's just because of your limited insight right now. Eventually, you'll see clearly. You'll be standing in front of the Supreme Being. And you'll know that's not the Universal Father. You'll know that's the Supreme Being. Now, it's going to be unbelievably cool. Okay? But boy, at that point, you're really going to have a whole new revelation of who the Universal Father really is. When you can literally shake the Supreme Being's hand.
Yeah? Well, actually, John was before me.
Okay.
So basically your point is the personality is always beyond, since it's from the Father, is always beyond even the Supreme.
By definition, it has to be beyond anything that you can currently in-see.
Quick question. My real question was, what are you actually reflecting on when you have these insights? Are you reflecting it on getting this part ready?
Certainly a lot of times. I mean, on a sort of a weekly basis, I'm expanding my insight by being able to answer any question that I can come up with for every sentence that I read, you know, in advance of the study group. In order to do that, you by definition have to have more insight than you did the week before.
You're exercising the mind.
Yeah.
I was only going to say when the Father sends the personality mm-hmm. reaches its destination, that's where it all begins. He locks on. We talked about this earlier. How absolutely he locks
right.
onto that.
Right. As long as you wholeheartedly accept that engagement, you're at eternity already. In the eyes of the Father. If there is a real engagement, then he sees you as an eternal lighter, not as a lowly mortal self.
So for us, we can't recognize personality outside of a form.
We can just challenge ourselves to begin. We know it's there. Just start challenging yourself.
Exist without God isn't, it's not over there, over here. Yeah. It exists with a living being.
Don't be satisfied with knowing someone as less than a person. And so you know them fully, and you still really haven't gotten to their core personality. Keep penetrating. And the less that you put the very subjective, lowly things that they are under the label personality, the easier it will be to be patient with them. You won't overly exalt that. Some people will say, "Oh, well, I guess I just have to learn to love that person because that's their personality. God gave it to them. God must." No, that's their animal origin self. Right. You're not supposed to love that. You're supposed to love the person.
Right.
The truth sets you free.
Well, the personality is the God-likeness in you.
Right, the God-likeness.
And
of course, just one little thing. Remember, it's potential God-likeness. And I wanted to just note this word. You notice here they say that he gives a portion of his divine nature into the hands of even human. It does not say deity nature. Challenge yourself divine. Every moment to distinguish unified. What the difference in the definition of the first two words that are defined in the foreword, what that difference is. Deity, divinity. You can have divinity, yes. Deity, never. Yeah. Not even lowercase d deity. All right.
So my question is, we had talked before about personality. Because when I was reading your conception paper, mm-hmm. and that as soon as a child is conceived, it's got personality potential. It's a potential, right? And it just is already there. Mm-hmm. So now I'm confused tonight when you're talking about how it's a bestowal.
It's a bestowal of potential. Everything that comes from the Father is a bestowal of potential only. I mean, the actuality of the adjuster is not yours to hold. The potential is given to you. That's why even if you choose iniquity, like they just said, the adjuster is indestructible regardless of, that wouldn't be true if you had a hold of the actuality of it. You would have destroyed it with your iniquity. You have a hold of the potentiality of it. Okay, that's all the Father gives you is the potential. And then like we've been talking, that's the existential deity gives you potential. And then through relationship with experiential deity, you can actually begin to actualize and realize those potentials. The Father doesn't give you actuality, he gives you potentiality.
And what happens when the adjuster comes? What happens to personality at that?
Well, it's just, it's an accelerant to the whole process, just like the Spirit of Truth is an accelerant to the whole process of trying to actually take that purposing that is completely there and trying to get some measure of it, of that potential actualized. Can you actually, remember when we were doing the personal responsibility comes down, and then self-control can flow upward. That human self, progressively more controlled self, can flow upward. A controlled self, what that represents is personality potential that's been actualized. That self has a measure of purposing. Actually, not just potentially, it actually is purposed. Now, have you gone through the steps of thought changer, thought adjuster, thought controller? Okay, if your thoughts are controlled, they're purposed. If they aren't controlled, they're not purposed. That what you're looking at, if it's an uncontrolled self, you're just looking at self. You're not looking at personality. You can see personality indirectly through a harmonized self. The extent to which the self looks like the universal harmony of the cosmos is the extent to which you can see, indirectly see personality. You know, through that thing. Since personality is not a thing itself, you can't see it directly. But you can see what it does to mind, matter, and spirit. It creates a threefold actuality with unity. It creates a harmony that is visible. Now, only personality looks like that harmony. And that's why that when they tell you that the personality has a sequential sense to it that's separate from spirit and mind and matter, that the ing, the sequence that you're sensing with your personality, it's not even perfecting, which is the spirit, or progressing, which is the mind. It's harmonizing. That's the sequence that the personality is responsible for. Nothing has a harmonizing, expression without personality. Do we want to?
No.
Yeah, let's read some more. Let's read some more.
The human personality can truly destroy individuality of creaturehood, and though all that was worthwhile in the life of such a cosmic suicide will persist, these qualities will not persist as an individual creature. The Supreme will again find expression in the creatures of the universe, but never again as that particular person. The unique personality of a non-ascender returns to the Supreme as a drop of water returns to the sea.
Again, that absorbs, see, drop of water. No longer separately recognizable.
It doesn't return to the quiver.
Yeah, this is what I wanted us to read before we talked about this in a little more depth. Look at the way they worded that sentence. That should really give you pause. The Supreme will again find expression. Oh yeah, here. Okay, so let's just read that whole sentence. The Supreme will again find expression in the creatures of the universes, but never again in that particular person. And then it says the unique personality of a non-ascender returns. Has anyone ever noticed that word?
Returns to the Supreme.
Returns to the Supreme? I thought it came from the Universal Father's quiver, from the reservoir of all will. What on earth does that sentence mean? I should just stop you dead in your tracks, and you shouldn't read another word in the book until you figure out what on earth that word means in there. Okay. This is, that word is in there because of the way we've had this discussion a number of times about this whole issue of the seeming illogic of an individual that chooses iniquity. Why on earth would God create something that just is a dead end? It's just not understandable from the bottom-up point of view, from the individuality viewpoint. Because it's, God created this thing and then, what on earth? It just disappeared. It just became as if it had never been born. I thought everything that God, had its hands on was immutable. I mean, I don't understand. Mm-hmm. So I say, this is again where the Supreme is so important. and why you have to begin to look both top down and bottom up to understand things. This is what why the word return is there. Because if you flip it around, see, when all is said and done, you have the Supreme Being. And that purposing that used to be identified with Lucifer is absorbed, you know, as a drop of water in the ocean of the full personality of the Supreme Being. You know that they've just told you. So think about what that means from a top-down viewpoint. In other words, it always was the Supreme Being's personality. It is the personality of the Supreme, of the Supreme Being. We need to be careful about my words. Of the Supreme Being. The reason that it seems so illogical is because you made a false assumption. You assumed that Lucifer was an individual in eternity. And then how can an individual in eternity disappear? That doesn't make sense. The Supreme Being is an individual in eternity. That it's the Supreme Being's personality. And that's why they started out back here on section 2, the Supreme is God in time. And remember when we talked about that paragraph? This whole bit about the oversoul, this is why this is in here, so you can begin to understand this. Think about the Supreme Being, and he has, from this top-down viewpoint, so here's the full Supreme Being, and there is no finite. And now, see, coming down from the absolute through the absonite, you're going to make the finite. So what happens to the Supreme Being as he projects himself down into time and he becomes God in time? Well, he ceases to be the Supreme Being, this fully unified synthesis personality. He spreads into the finite. And sort of the deity part, they're saying, you know, you can think of that sort of that fundamental essence of his synthesis coming down as the Supreme, and then you can understand more of what's going on if you recognize that there was a mother likeness and an almighty likeness that was there that now is separate. And so you actually have these three facets of deity. You have the mother and the almighty and the Supreme, where the Supreme now is understood as the super additive consequence of the relationship between the two. You know, all that stuff used to be all together here in the Supreme Being, but when I project it down into the finite, you're projecting away from unity towards individuality. It individuates. The one, you know, unity has to become more individuated, has to spread apart. And it literally is even the case with the Supreme's personality. This is what they're trying to get us to recognize. That one unified personality, you know, fragments, if you will, sort of, you know, finitely individuates, even though it's absonitely unified. And there's obviously a real core, unindividuatable core of that, of the Supreme's personal purposive nature. Like we pointed out, that's the personal purposive aspect of the mother. You know, that the power pattern part goes to the Almighty. That core part is attached, you know, and is what we call God the Mother then when we think about that, or the Universal Mother as an individual. But that's not all of that personality. There's some purposiveness that actually gets connected to parts. And that shouldn't be surprising, because you've got the Mother and then you have the Almighty. And the Almighty is the summation of the parts. And they tell you it's valid to use the term God the Almighty to put the personalized thing onto that deity name. How? There's a core non-part-like purposiveness of the Supreme, the Mother. And then there's a part-wise sort of thing. I mean, and And it has this amazing thing when you actually think about the consequences of that, that it literally manifests as these segments of apparent individuality called like Lucifer and Satan and any other little iniquitous, i.e. non-whole chunk. The whole chunk is the mother. That's, you know, but there's little parts, a part that spans this little chunk and this little chunk and this, and all those are associated with God the Almighty. And that's all has to be eventually, you know, now if you put it all down there, all split apart, and then you run the movie picture backwards, you know, and what do you have? That picture that I tried to point out, you think of the mother as this, the upholder hand. And what's it, what is that hand holding, upholding? It's all those parts are laid on that. And those parts are focalized, are drawn together by the action of the mother. That's what the mother, mother's the focalizer part. This is the Almighty's the summarizer part. It you know gets a finger on each one of the parts has a sum, but you've got to bring that sum actually together, unify it. Okay. And then you're all the way back to the Supreme Being again.
So
that's the returns. It's the Supreme Being's personality that got spread out, separated, and has returned back.
It came from the quiver.
Right. See, in the top-down view, how does this work? In the top-down view, God the Father reaches back, grabs the personality of the Supreme Being, and he makes the Supreme Being. That's what's, you know, because it's coming top-down. The Father is not doing bottom-up, he's doing top-down. He makes the Supreme Being, and then the Supreme Being goes down into time. That's the way it works from the Father's perspective.
So does that mean that every personality that the Father gives has that ability? Or
no, I would say.
Yeah. Well, there's an association ability with between personalities.
There's
so part of that
it does introduce some interesting thoughts about they did mention the creature trinitized sons, and there's some interesting things about they don't give you a lot of information. Maybe there is some supreme like aspect to us too. At least those of us who would do that. Maybe I don't know. You could speculate along those lines. See, I mean, they over and over they're trying to get us to draw parallels between ourselves and the Supreme. Because there can't help but be just very complete parallels. We come from the Supreme. You know, we have much more in common in terms of the details with the Supreme than we do with the Universal Father.
Nothing else is the parenting aspect. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So is there a second confirmation in the book about this?
What you mean, the return thing? You mean?
No, that personality comes from the Supreme.
Oh no! See now, personality doesn't get that would be a false statement. You can't say the personality comes from Supreme. That's false. The personality of an iniquitous being, was part of a whole personality. That's why it became iniquitous, because it wasn't a whole. It was a part. There's no way it could reach eternity. Only a whole personality can reach eternity. That was just a part.
But the Father originally bestowed that whole personality.
Father bestowed a whole personality upon the Supreme Being.
Right. Yeah.
He bestowed Lucifer's personality.
All of personality. Well, that's what they're just trying to get us to see. Not just like, we shouldn't. You know, technically, truth, beauty, and goodness, and love, this is what they're trying to get us to understand. That there's the first hint that you have of this phenomenon. Where you're not going to think of it so simplistically, is all of it comes directly from the Father. Remember, they tell you there's first source personalities and third source personalities.
Yeah.
So the very first thing that the Father did was he took the total reservoir of will and he sort of split it in two or whatever.
Okay.
And half of the reservoir he handed to the third source and center. And he's done now with his bestowal. He just bestowed that huge reservoir of potential. He didn't bestow individuated. So it's a bestowal of a reservoir of potential on the third source. And then the rest that he can't, remember, he gives away everything that he can. So in other words, out of that total reservoir of will, there's a part of it that he can actually separate from the rest of it and give to someone else. And so he does. But then there's a part that only he can bestow directly, first source personalities. But they're adding another notch to that. They're saying if you're going to actually try to understand iniquity, you have to see the Father putting a big measure of personality on the Supreme Being, and then when you put that down into time, that splits up into apparent, separate things. It isn't truly separate, but finitely it's separate, at least for a short period of time. For a short period of time, Lucifer was a separate person. But, then it returned to where it came from.
Dicey.
Yeah, it does.
This gets really dicey.
I know.
It does, but it sounds right.
See?
It sounds right. Yeah.
This is what they're trying to challenge us.
You're saying the Father did not give personality to Lucifer?
Not directly. Just like the Father did not directly give the creative Mother Spirit personality.
Let me turn the question.
That's all I'm saying.
So, can an iniquitous person get personality from the Father?
I mean, indirectly, all personality comes from the Father.
Right.
But not. But what they're trying to tell us is it didn't return to the Father. It returned to its immediate source.
That you're saying that all iniquitous beings came from this secondary distribution of personality.
That's what they're trying to point out. I mean, it becomes part of the Supreme.
I think we're in success.
Carry
that for us.
But again, you're
saying that iniquitous are separate from.
But the thing that sounds wrong with what you're saying is wrong. Think about carefully what you said. You mixed top down and bottom up in the same sentence,
right,
and made it illogical. I mean, the Supreme Being does not bestow iniquitous personality.
All right. Fact number one.
Any more than when the Creator Son and the Creative Mother Spirit gave birth to that primary Lenanandek, they didn't name him the entity that is entirely darkness. They didn't name him Kaligastya. Okay. That's what they're trying to. All they're trying to do is just bring in this top down, and I'm stressing it because. I've been saying this, and you're thinking, well, okay, top down, bottom up, whatever. No, this has huge consequences. If you truly look at it from top down, you have words like return in this sentence.
Yeah, well, okay.
I'm not there yet.
Because
what the definition of return.
Because you've separated. Now, it's just like if you're a spirit-fused mortal, you return to the source of that fragment of spirit that is being drawn by spirit gravity. Well, all spirit, eventually goes back to the first. It's the first source, the center of all things and being. So, it's got to go back to the first source, right? No, it goes back to the first source above. But there's a hierarchy of sources. This is what the whole point of this section is to really start to get you to see a hierarchy of everything, not just of some things, but a hierarchy of even sources. So spirit gravity of the eternal Son pulling on that spirit fragment, that spirit-fused immortal's fragment, pulling on it, and he said, well, it's the eternal Son. He can pull it all the way to paradise. No, he can't. Not now. He pulls it back to the local universe level. If it's a sun-fused fragment, a fragment of a reflected spirit, he pulls in and it goes up, it only goes up to Yversa. Back to the source. If it's actual Father fragment, and he pulls it, it goes all the way up to paradise. Okay? This is the same sort of thing. All these sorts of things, you have to allow the hierarchy of bestowal. Third source.
Everything you said.
Third source.
Are we not father distributed personalities? Father personalities.
Yeah.
all the way back,
not
yes.
Ultimately, directly.
You are, unless you think you are going to be iniquitous. your personality came. Yeah.
Chris, I'm not sure about that. I mean, it smacks of, you know, the kind of
it's going
predeterministic.
To, yes, it does. And right, exactly. And that you've got to take it to that point logically. That's at the point where you recognize that you can only begin this process of looking at it both ways. You're going to come up with an illogical dead end from the top down. But at least, you know, you have a little bit more of it. That's exactly what I want you to see.
And don't discount free will.
Right. Right. See, this, you're always going to come up against this. You know, that how can you truly understand free will in the midst of statements like, well, the adjuster comes with a plan. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, okay, so then I don't have free will.
Cooperation.
Yeah, well, see, everyone has read
if
that and been reflecting on it for years and have started to get, you had a response. Okay, a person 200 years ago wouldn't have had a response to that. See, they would have just gone, oh, well, that proves predestination. The Urantia book confirms predestination. See, this is the challenge. Can you take these statements that seem to be forcing you into some old theological mode and see them in a new light?
It's not like at the beginning he bestowed personality. He's an infinity and eternity. So he knows what every being in all of eternity chooses all the time. So there's no, I mean, even though we have free will, it's not like it was at a beginning point in time and then we chose later on. It's all happening now.
Right. So. You don't have free will that transcends the I am. The I am, you know, is. I mean, and we all are in, you know, in the infinite. You know, if you start with the infinite and go top down, there's only one way back up.
You never get out of
it. I mean, this, you know, and if you go, well, that just, that's, I refuse that. That's predestination to say, but that's what you have to try to understand. How, you know, to what degree do you have free will? It's what they just said. Why did they italicize this? These qualities will not persist as an individual creature. Okay, and they're going to stress it even further when they go on.
Hmm.
Consequential. That's consequential to choosing.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
It's consequential.
But then
to
top down.
Choosing.
But then in top down, it seems like it's predestination.
Well, it doesn't seem like that if you reject this concept. You know, I don't see that the concept allows for the full exercise of free will if there's this the personality, we're being given father personality, it's not inferior in any way. Okay? And I'm not saying that mm-hmm. if the Supreme bestowed it. It would be, but we're not told the Supreme bestows personality.
See, I would never use that word. The Supreme didn't bestow it.
Okay.
See, that's not what happened. The Supreme went down into time.
Here's what I'm objecting to. I know that in your process, you've got this concept has come up, and it's still in pretty raw form. So it's not fully articulated for the masses. Okay, and the way it's coming across mm-hmm. is the way we're digesting this. Mm-hmm. It you know there's a number of different ways to interpret this, and so I'm challenging this because I want to get to some kind of clear understanding.
And that's not going to happen tonight.
Well, I don't.
You know,
I don't expect it to happen.
It's a process.
But the point is to begin this process. I'm just trying to point out. The you know what they've got in here. They've got words that challenge a beginning of a new process.
Okay, well let me throw another thing in here. We've been abstracting so much about what personality is mm-hmm. that you know, I
think you'd be the first to agree that personality is the most potent reality, along with the thought adjuster, that is part of our being.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's the most real part of who we are.
Potential.
Well, yeah, you can talk about potential all you like.
Well, no, see, you got to distinguish. The way you were using the word reality there is like in the title Deity and Reality.
Right.
That's the way you were using the word reality there. When I'm using potential, mm-hmm. that's when I'm doing potential, actual, real. Uh-huh. Where the word real is different than the way you were just using the word real.
Okay, that's fine.
See?
You know,
because you got to use it in two different ways. The bottom-up viewpoint and the top-down.
Right. Well, I'm coming from the experiential viewpoint. Okay. You know, I come back here, you know, every couple of weeks, mm-hmm. and I'm not confused at all, and it has nothing to do with the fact that, you know, you're usually sweating before study group. That's not how I recognize you. I don't recognize you because of, you know, your hair. Your hair has been changing color for years now, okay? All right?
Not as much as Jim. All
right. Not as much as Jim. But I recognize personalities. I recognize who these people are. And I had this experience, you know, seeing Barry Bedell for the first time in probably a couple of, you know, a couple of decades almost. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I didn't recognize him. I didn't recognize him, you know, sitting
until he spoke to you.
In a group of people, until he spoke to me.
Right.
Then, boom,
right
there.
Right.
Well, this reality that is us is significant. And it's so significant that the archangels are keeping track of every aspect of this personality from birth to death, and even all the way through the local universe.
Right.
That means there's something to keep track of.
Yes.
It's not all just potential.
Right, and did I say that there wasn't something to keep track of? I called it God the Almighty. I would keep track of that. That sounds pretty significant. That sounds like a pretty darn significant chunk of personality. But I've been trying to build up to this. Mm-hmm. You know, this. You know, a lot of times we've been talking about the Mother and the Almighty. We've been keeping it on the deity level. But that, one of the more challenging statements in the whole book is when they stick the word God in front of the Almighty. Because fundamentally, the Almighty is not the personal purposive part. You know, they tell you 50 times, you know, in two pages. It's the power pattern part. It's, you know, it's the energy pattern side, not the spirit pattern side. So putting the word God, which means personalized deity, not energy patternized deity, in front of that, it seems to be a non sequitur. What on earth does God the Almighty mean? I can understand God the Mother. That makes sense. You know, they tell you all these times that part of his, you know, that's the personal spirit part and everything. It's like, okay, well, yeah, you can stick God in front of that part then. How can you stick God in front of the Almighty? That's not the spirit personal part. There has to be personality in some very different way attached to that. It's like, well, yeah, it's really different because on the one hand, you've got this very unified facet, the Mother. And the other one they call a summation. You know, a pile of parts waiting to be fused together into a whole. Okay, that doesn't sound like unity to me, and that's what I attach the word personality to. See, everything about it seems to be a non sequitur to say God the Almighty, and yet there it is in black and white. In the book, God the Almighty. What on earth do they mean by that? Where is the personality that comes to that? It's only when you start to think about these really, really different things, ideas that humans have never even remotely had, like what we're talking about right now, where you're actually seeing that there are parts of personality. There aren't unified wholes out there. There's these things, you know, Lucifer was a person. You know, we called him a person. Because everyone, even the highest examiners, looked at him, and as near as they could tell, he was a whole. And then lo and behold, you discover, no, it was a part of the Supreme. It was absorbed like a drop of water into the ocean. And what's up with that? Okay, just those are the thoughts. I'm trying to put those thoughts out there and reflect on those. You know, just trying to see.
Lucifer can come back from the brain.
You can't come back from iniquity. You can come back from heavy duty sin, but the definition of iniquity is irreversible. That's the irreversible state.
And not irreversible for God.
That whole
for
section
him.
Where they're talking about the mercy credits that go on even beyond that to me read.
Again, God can't make a square circle.
Yeah, but the person, if he's still got choice.
But he doesn't.
See? Okay, so you're saying that, well, then why?
You go past the point of choice. He's still making decisions, but no choice anymore.
There's a fallacy in that the end of his existence is inevitable.
Right, I mean, it's just this mindal energy phenomenon that's waiting for the executioners to snuff it out.
Well,
there's no personality identification anymore.
But as soon as they identify that, they snuff it out.
No, he's been in that state for a long, long time now.
That's the problem.
Yeah, and remember,
why is he in that state?
Yeah, well, that's, you know, the wisdom of delay. Okay.
For other people to make choices.
All right, let's keep going here. All right.
Mortal man, being a creature... is not
exact. Wait a minute. Where are we?
I'm on the wrong page.
Yeah, you are.
Sorry.
His spirit of redemption.
And isolated action. Yeah. Were you on the next page?
I was on the previous
page. Yeah, okay. All right.
Any isolated action of the personal parts of the finite is comparatively irrelevant to the eventual appearance of the supreme whole. But the whole is nonetheless dependent on the total acts of the manifold parts. The personality of the individual mortal is insignificant in the face of the total of supremacy. But the personality of each human being represents an irreplaceable meaning value in the finite. Personality, having once been expressed, never again finds identical expression except in the continuing existence of that living personality.
Okay, we got to point out... here you have that expression again with a capital W on the whole. Okay, and then they use whole with a lowercase w right after that. See, and this is related to this discussion we were just having. When you think about this purposiveness of God the Mother, okay, your purposes, an isolated action of the personal parts of the finite is comparatively irrelevant, okay, to the eventual appearance of the supreme whole. That whole is going to be a focalizing phenomenon regardless of how many parts are there or whatever. It's just a focalizing phenomenon of whatever parts are there. Okay, so the actions of the parts you can take one part out, it doesn't change the focalizing action of the mother at all. Relatively, like you were saying, it's comparatively irrelevant. But the other side of the equation is not, that's not the case. You know, but the whole is nevertheless dependent on the total acts of the manifold parts. This is a good example of a sentence that if you're trying to just understand the Supreme as a single thing, and you don't have the Mother and the Almighty, that's a nonsensical sentence. It's saying the opposite, apparently, about the same thing. The supreme whole, that's the supreme mother. That's the individuality of the whole. But this whole, the summation, that's the Almighty. Okay? And the acts of each finite person is one of the parts in that sum. You are definitely relevant to the Almighty. You can think about it. You've got this, the full action of the completed nature of the Supreme Being, and you bring it down into the finite. And Because there's an Almighty, there can be us. Because there's a part of the Supreme that is this collection of parts, there can be separate creatures. If all there was just that unindividuatable downward expression as the mother, there's no room for, there's no source of partness. The Almighty is the source of our partness. And that's why, when they talk about our actions, it's so fundamentally linked to the Almighty, because it's just like they're saying here. I mean, that one part in that sum, is directly tied to you. But the mother, is underneath, basically, of all those parts, and is going to bring them all those reflections of us together. Now, at the same time, like I'll point out as they go along, there's obviously going to be a backward reflection as the mother brings the parts of the Almighty together, and if we're linked to that, those parts, we're going to be coming together. Not like drops of water into an ocean, but in some higher way. So again, that's why you can have the Supreme is the source for the potential of the brotherhood of man. If you're going to actualize the brotherhood of man, if man is actually going to come together and function as a system, that's because there's a source of that. The mother has brought a measure of the Almighty together, and that's reflected down in a coalescence on a given world as an increasing brotherhood of man.
Okay. And so, as we strive for self-expression, the Supreme is striving in us and with us for deity expression. As we find the Father, so has the Supreme again found the paradise creator of all things. As we master the problems of self-realization, so is the God of experience achieving almighty supremacy in the universes of time and space.
Okay. Notice the little details there. As we strive for self-expression, not personality realization. And what is it tied to? Is it a capital D deity? The Supreme is striving with us, or in us and with us for deity expression. That's, when they're using the lowercase d, that's when you're talking about the triadity, the potentials of the triadities coming into, leading to the Almighty. That's that bottom-up part of the Supreme, just like our bottom-up selves. Okay? They're just pointing out that parallel.
Mankind does not ascend effortlessly in the universe. Neither does the Supreme evolve without purposeful and intelligent action. Creatures do not attain perfection by mere passivity, nor can the spirit of supremacy factualize the power of the Almighty without unceasing service ministry to the finite creation.
Yeah. Two parts there. Yeah. The spirit of supremacy, that's the mother, and the Almighty. And again, see, just notice that, that picture that they're painting, just like we've been doing here. The spirit of supremacy factualized the power of the Almighty. That factualizing the power, again, is how much has it brought the parts together so that it functions more and more as a whole? More and more that the Almighty has a wholeness to it instead of just a collection of parts, the more the cosmos will function less and less like a bunch of independent parts that don't talk to each other. More and more there'll be this synchronicity in the cosmos. And coincidentally, just what you need will be there when you need it. And, that's...
I think the interesting part there was that we don't ascend effort.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't that what kind of Lucifer suggested?
Yes.
That we ascend effortlessly.
That's the...
You can't just sit around. Get off your job.
And he took it one step further, John. Recognize, He said, yes, you do ascend effortlessly, therefore you don't ascend.
Yeah.
The ascension
let's forget about ascension.
There is no ascension. It's the third principle of the Lucifer Manifesto.
It's too much of an effort to think about.
You are innately divine. That's... But see, they're challenging you. The only reason that you don't ascend effortlessly is because the Supreme doesn't
Right.
Ascend.
It's not all about us.
Right. Yeah. Everything that you have has a source.
What a relief.
And what they're trying to point out, no matter what you start on with, you immediately get to the supreme, really. Mm-hmm. You know, yes. They're trying to point, it's the immediate source of all the patterns that you experience in your life.
It's an unceasing service ministry to the finite creation.
Mm-hmm.
That could encompass a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not just people.
We didn't mention it, but you know they mentioned it in passing. This struggle that the Supreme is doing, you know, you're thinking, well, is there like some great big thing that it's struggling with, just like we struggle with little things? Well, yes and no. It's not struggling with a really big part. It's struggling with the total, the whole. You know, the super additive consequence of all the parts. That's what it's struggling with.
Yeah.
We're all struggling with the parts. It's struggling with the super additive consequence. Or to look at it top down, because it's struggling with that, you know, that manifests down below as all the parts struggling.
Hmm.
Okay? Wow. It's struggling with that super additive consequence.
Right.
You downstep that into the finite, and then all the parts are struggling.
We don't.
The act is ours, the super additivity is
good. Right. It's just you can look at it both ways. Yes, it's an antecedent following.
Several hundred trillion years ago in the first super universe, God the Supreme was struggling even more because there wasn't that much together. Now there's a bunch more together, so the struggle is less. Does that follow?
Well, it's kind of the way we would look at it. It seems reasonable to approach it that way when we try to have a top-down view. Starting friction is always greater than kinetic friction. Static friction is greater than kinetic friction. You would kind of assume it would be that way. There's no super universes, and the finite's got to kind of overcome that initial. And then once it gets going, it's still a struggle, but it's not as much as getting that thing started. We would kind of think of it that way.
It might be more complicated now.
It's probably a fairly limited analogy, but
I think there's no end to the importance that faith plays in the entire universe career. You can never lose faith because faith is always required to go to any next level. And I think one of the things that Lucifer must have been perplexed about, he must have had a pretty good understanding of the Supreme and just said, that's impossible. That's never going to happen. You idiots really believe that?
No.
Unification of the entire finite creation into one synchronous harmonious whole?
And because
that's
it's not,
never going to happen.
And because it's not going to happen, I need to do it. I need to set it in motion.
No, he said, give up. Just give up on that idea.
Well,
it's nonsense.
Yeah.
But then he went further and
he
fell
made his
in
own,
with that.
He made
yeah.
his own fiefdom.
Yeah. Yeah.
Incredible.
All right.
But,
okay.
The temporal relation of man to the Supreme is the foundation for cosmic morality. The universal sensitivity to and acceptance of duty. This is a morality which transcends the temporal sense of relative right and wrong. It is a morality directly predicated on the self-conscious creature's appreciation of experiential obligation to experiential deity. Mortal man and all other finite creatures are created out of the living potential of energy, mind, and spirit existent in the Supreme. It is upon the Supreme that the adjuster, mortal ascender, draws for the creation of the immortal and divine character of a finaliter. It is out of the very reality of the Supreme that the adjuster, with the consent of the human will, weaves the patterns of the eternal nature of an ascending Son of God.
Okay, that very first part, go back and kind of look at that again. We were settling into that paragraph. That's the a really key part tied to this. The fact that there's two consecrations. The temporal relation of man to the Supreme is the foundation for cosmic morality. Not to the Father, to the Supreme.
Yeah.
Okay. And you know, what is righteousness? Conformity with the cosmos.
Duty.
Conformity with the cosmos. That's in section 7 of paper 16, right after section 6, where they introduce three cosmic intuitions, the three domains, causation, duty, and worship. Okay. They're harkening you back to that, to paper 16, section 6, and the three sections that follow it, you know, that discuss those three cosmic intuitions, to get you to bump up the word morality, and also to link it very definitively to the supreme, to the cosmos. You know, that vague little notion of personal responsibility that you get because the Father gave you a personality, you know, that you then create some sort of just arbitrary right and wrong code out of, some moralism out of. We're not talking about that. We're talking about true morality, conformity with the cosmos, something that you can only have if you've consecrated your mind to the cosmic harmony of God the Mother. It's not conformity with the will of the Father. It's conformity with the cosmos. It's conformity with the universal harmony of God the Mother. It's the other part of the picture, and it's a part that mankind has never understood. That's why it's so significant, this revelation of the Supreme. It is a morality directly predicated on the self-conscious creature's appreciation of experiential obligation to experiential deity. It's not about existential obligation to existential deity. That's a separate issue. That's consecration of your will to the perfect will of God the Father. This is about consecration of your mind to the cosmic harmony of God the Mother.
One of the things that occurs to me here, and it goes back to the tension. You were talking earlier about personality and the thought adjuster. Thought adjuster is a pre-personal aspect of deity. And the personality comes from that quiver of the Father. I mean, it's still infinite. So the thought adjuster knows the potential of the personality, and the personality knows the value of the thought adjuster. And there's the cosmic tension. There's the big gift to each other. And there's a trinity involved there because we find ourselves between that. All we have to do is, as they say, it is out of, with the consent of the human will. Mm-hmm. So this tension will hold itself and fail if we don't cooperate with it. So there's a... And it's actually a quad because you've got the thought adjuster, the personality, the self, and the supreme. So you've got this triangular,
there's all these different things that are in the mix.
Yeah.
But fundamentally recognizing that there's a, you know, in the span of the Father, you have the first center, the first source, okay, that's where your personality came from. Yeah. Then you've got the universal Father, universal Creator, universal Controller, and then you have the infinite Upholder, where your thought adjuster came from. They aren't right next to each other. There's a separation there.
But we find ourselves
in that tension.
The evolution of adjuster progress in the spiritualizing and eternalizing of a human personality is directly productive of an enlargement of the sovereignty of the Supreme. Such achievements in human evolution are at the same time achievements in the evolutionary actualization of the Supreme. While it is true that creatures could not evolve without the Supreme, it is probably also true that the evolution of the Supreme can never be fully attained independent of the completed evolution of all creatures. Herein lies the great cosmic responsibility of self-conscious personalities. That Supreme Deity is in a certain sense dependent on the choosing of the mortal will. And the mutual progression of creature evolution and of supreme evolution is faithfully and fully indicated to the ancients of days over the inscrutable mechanisms of universe reflectivity.
There's tons of stuff in all these paragraphs, but just let me point out a couple little things there. That, you know, again, if the Almighty is the summation, it obviously couldn't be a total summation if it was missing some parts in the summation. Hence that statement about, you know, it is probably also true that the evolution of the Supreme can never be fully attained independent of the completed evolution of all creatures. And again, they're being very cautious about the wording there, right? Just like we've talked about a couple times, the mighty messenger is. Herein lies, this distinction is vital, herein lies the great cosmic responsibility. See, the cosmic responsibility, not the personal responsibility, that's with existential deity. This is the other side. If you do not consecrate your mind to the cosmic harmony of God the Mother, the Supreme can't come together. That's why back here it said wisdom action and not ignorance action. You know, and it's sad to record that almost everything that's happening on this planet isn't attached to the Almighty and hence to the Supreme. It's not wisdom action. It's lots and lots of action, very intelligent action even, but it's not wisdom action. It has no relationship to the Supreme.
Okay? Sometimes wisdom action is recognized and it's not acted upon.
Or whatever. Just notice, you work on running with these thoughts yourself, but just I want you to notice these points. See? It does not say personal responsibility, it says cosmic responsibility. That's something different.
Continue on with that phrase, though. No. Cosmic responsibility of self-conscious personalities.
No. You can't... the second part...
At what point do you acquire self-conscious? At fusion?
No.
Before
you,
then?
You can...
When
can you be consciousness of yourself?
Well,
when you have a personality.
Yeah.
So, roughly age 6, you have the first ability for that personality, now that it's actually engaging this, to begin to see that separation.
Well, several hyphenated words. Self-conscious is one of them. God-conscious is certainly another. So that's at a further point of self-conscious.
Well, and all these are hierarchical.
Right.
Self-conscious is hierarchical. God-consciousness is hierarchical.
So you're saying
self-conscious
is way back at the beginning.
It starts at the beginning.
How can you have a cosmic responsibility when you're 5 years old?
You make your first moral choice, remember?
Well, okay, so
that's
all right.
You don't recognize it, but that was cosmic responsibility. You used that domain of duty, second cosmic intuition.
Didn't feel like that.
It didn't. But you don't have to be.
I can't remember it.
Yep.
What's this about?
Yeah, I couldn't really describe it when I was 6. What's up with that?
Okay, John?
What's this about the ancients of days?
Let me think. Do we want to jump into that? The key is, remember the reflective spirits are there with the ancients of days, connecting into the reflectivity mechanism. But the bigger question is, why did they bring that up? It relates to what we figured out with the whole hierarchy of the mothers in here. You know, and where universe reflectivity began once the full spectrum of the mothers was completed. In particular, the creative mother agencies of the ancients of days. Just if you remember that whole conversation we had about that and how that was fundamentally tied to our growing understanding of the action of the mother in the cosmos. Sure enough, what am I talking about? What did I just spend all this time talking about this paragraph? This consecration of your mind to the cosmic harmony of God, the Mother. Okay, that's why that's in there. These paragraphs are filled with suggestion. You know, if you can figure out why all these things are together, you're gonna unlock the, you know, what they're trying to get you to see. There's a relationship between reflectivity and mother, and that's they're trying to seed these paragraphs. Yeah. I can't do a lot of service to that without launching into a great big huge discussion, but
the great challenge that has been given to mortal man is this: will you decide to personalize the experienceable value meanings of the cosmos into your own evolving selfhood? Or, by rejecting survival, will you allow these secrets of supremacy to lie dormant, awaiting the action of another creature at some other time who will, in his way, attempt a creature contribution to the evolution of the finite God? But that will be his contribution to the Supreme, not yours.
Yeah, just, I mean, is that, it's just, you know, notice how forceful they're trying to drive this home, just like I was. You know, this is not, well, maybe I'll get around to that whole cosmic responsibility sometime. It's like, do you, no, it's a responsibility, you know, a sacred responsibility to the Supreme, just like you have a sacred responsibility to the Father, you know, to honor the gifts that He gave you. You know, are you honoring your relationship to the Supreme? Are you taking delight in cultivating these qualities of courageous and independent cosmic thinking? Or are you ignoring that responsibility? You know, and if you keep doing that, guess what? Even that which you have will be taken from you. The parable of the talents. You know, and it will be His way, not yours. It'll be someone else's. You know, and remember how this fits. Think about that story of the talents. That's exactly what Jesus said. You know, when the one talent was taken away, was it just like, you know, throw it back in a pile or something? No, it was given to the ones that...
Yeah.
Jesus was telling us this. This is how the cosmos works. You
so
can't...
That void in the Supreme of the iniquitous personality. I mean, somebody makes a choice that says, okay, I'm going to throw in the towel. You know, they could have been part of the Supreme, but now they're only part of the Supreme as a continuing personality, but not as an individual.
Right.
Is that void filled in by Amidon or me,
right,
or somebody else?
Just because, you know, there's all these other parts.
Yeah.
And there's future parts to come, you know.
So it's not like a puzzle where there's a missing piece and it's missing forever. It gets filled in by other people.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and that's what they're stressing here.
You say collateral. And
yeah. And
contributing.
Yeah. I mean,
collateral and contributing.
Yeah.
The great struggle of this universe age is between the potential and the actual, the seeking for actualization by all that is yet unexpressed. If mortal man proceeds upon the paradise adventure, he is following the motions of time, which flow as currents within the stream of eternity. If mortal man rejects the eternal career, he is moving counter to the stream of events in the finite universes. The mechanical creation moves on inexorably in accordance with the unfolding purpose of the Paradise Father, but the volitional creation has the choice of accepting or of rejecting the role of personality participation in the adventure of eternity. Mortal man cannot destroy the supreme values of human existence, but he can very definitely prevent the evolution of these values in his own personal experience. To the extent that the human self thus refuses to take part in the paradise ascent, to just that extent is the supreme delayed in achieving divinity expression in the grand universe.
You can see how many things they're touching upon, these difficulties that we've been, you know, going back and forth on. Notice a couple things. Notice the very top-down statement of he is following the motions of time which flow as currents within the stream of eternity. That's a top-down view. I mean, you have the whole thing. And then you're just zeroing in and noticing that within that, all that stream, there's the streams of finite. Okay. It's a very top-down view, you know, so that you can have the Supreme Being, and then the Supreme Being is reaching down into time. You know, and that there's an absentite stream that is reaching down into the finite streams. the finite streams, the absolute supremes, the absolute streams, the infinite streams are all there together in that full top-down view. It isn't this thing where you've got nothing above and you've just got the stuff on the bottom, and they said it that way because really there's just nowhere you can really go with it, thinking of it really bottom up very far. It's such a limited viewpoint. At some point, you've got to just embrace the fact that it's all there, and you're experiencing your way up through it. You know, you're not somehow, co-creating the next thing to stand on. You know, it's all there, and you're moving up through it. You're experiencing the whole. The whole is there.
And how do you know if you're taking part or not taking part? And kind of as you said, I mean, is it just more or less your desire? Mm-hmm.
Recognition is good.
You always feel like so, like you're never getting enough done.
Yeah.
Well, maybe.
Remember what. What gives you value is your potential, not your actuality. All God is looking for is something that's moving, no matter how slowly.
Got a pulse.
Yeah.
Desire.
Desire. You know how many statements are on the book that speak to that. Yeah. It's there. Just you have to know that those statements are true. Even if you haven't yet experienced the facts directly, you've got to know they're true nonetheless.
Plus, it's also like Bill said, faith is right on top there.
Yeah. It starts with faith, but move it to trust. Get it to trust so that the doubt goes away. There's room for doubt when there's just mere faith. And there's no room for doubt in a solid trust.
Into the keeping of mortal man has been given not only the adjuster presence of the Paradise Father, but also control over the destiny of an infinitesimal fraction of the future of the Supreme. For as man attains human destiny, so does the Supreme achieve destiny on deity levels. And so the decision awaits each of you as it once awaited each of us. Will you fail the God of time, who is so dependent on the decisions of the finite mind? Will you fail the supreme personality of the universes by the slothfulness of animalistic retrogression? Will you fail the great brother of all creatures, who is so dependent on each creature? Can you allow yourself to pass into the realm of the unrealized when before you lies the enchanting vista of the universe career, the divine discovery of the Paradise Father, and the divine participation in the search for and the evolution of the God of supremacy?
Okay, I think everyone recognized the power with which they're going at you there. Notice the parallel again. Will you fail? How many times? Peter, do you love me? Peter, do you love me? Peter, do you love me? Okay. Again, Jesus, modeled this. Just like Jesus asked Peter, Peter, he's asking Peter the exact same question. He's not asking Peter about his relationship to God the Father. He's asking Peter about his relationship with God the Supreme. He's saying to Peter, Peter, will you fail the God of time? Go back and read what he says after that. Does he say, well, then sit there and contemplate the existentialness of the Father? He doesn't say that. He says, get out there and do it.
Feed my sheep.
Go back to what's the sentence? Andre probably remembers it, the beginning of the first paper of these five. Something about not just being,
but doing.
Okay? This is the two consecrations. You must consecrate to be, but then you must consecrate to do. Because if you don't, you will fail the God of time, etc., etc. Okay?
what I'm reading in here, maybe it's my own personal bias, but you all can let me know, is that you can, you know, this is a transformation in my life. You can, coming up from a meditation background, mm-hmm. you can actually energize from doing, not just from sitting. And being a devotee of leisure, you can actually energize by doing, and it won't deplete you.
Right.
That's what the angels tell us in section two.
Notice
it is not the effort to achieve that exhausts.
Right. Right. And see what a fundamental challenge that is to a long-standing confusion, endless centuries of mystics trying to just be. They're missing the whole other part of the thing. You know, just like they said here, you know, it's not just about the duty to existential. You know, remember when we were back here, the duty to the experiential deity.
There's still a place for the meditation. For
yes.
Sure.
Where, what,
for the study.
What is that place?
For the thinking.
Yeah,
there's
just
a place for it. It's that same duality. It's not only due.
No.
You know, those who those
but
who
see it sequentially.
They'll get tired.
See it sequentially. That's the thing. Don't say, well, okay, I'll create a twofold thing and I'll bounce back and forth between them. See it in the same order that they are. First there's the existential and then there's the experiential. For instance, in the inner life, start by finding it, meditation. But then do. Yeah. Reflection. Reflection is the doing. The active mode. Meditation, you know, you start with meditation, just like God first gives you a personality, and then he expects you to exercise it. You start with the being. First you got to figure out how to be in the heart place, in the temple. Okay? But then you recognize, well, he probably didn't just create this so I can sit here and stare at the ceiling for all eternity.
Right.
You know, the beautiful stained glass in the temple.
Right.
He created this for a purpose. What is it? I'm supposed to do something here. What is it?
But it's a circular simultaneity. It's not one time I get the point, the rest of existence I do the point.
Of course not.
It's
look to your master, John.
But just see them in an order. Don't go back and forth. Go this, then that. Cause and then effect.
But let me say something real quick. Okay. When Jesus had, and something I reflected on today, because I was facing a possible conflict, when Jesus had a conflict, he went off, he walked off by himself, and then he came back, sometimes overnight, the very next morning, he addressed it. He didn't evade it.
He connected to the Father to reinitiate, and then he went out and did the Supreme.
Yeah, yeah. He immediately used that meditative time.
God's gifts, his bestowal of reality, are not divorcements from himself. He does not alienate creation from himself, but he has set up tensions in the creation circling paradise. God first loves man and confers upon him the potential of immortality, eternal reality. And as man loves God, so does man become eternal in actuality. And here is mystery. The more closely man approaches God through love, the greater the actuality of that man. The more man withdraws from God, the more nearly he approaches non-reality, cessation of existence. When man consecrates his will to the doing of the Father's will, when man gives God all that he has, then does God make that man more than he is.
Okay, look at that. Look at that last sentence. Everyone knows that sentence, but how many wins are in that sentence? Two consecrations, not one. Okay. And notice how carefully they word it. Why does it shift from Father to God? Why doesn't it repeat Father? Okay. When man consecrates his will to the doing of the Father's will, when man gives God the Mother all that he has, then does God the Mother make that man more than he is? See, if you consecrate your mind to the perfect harmony of God the Mother, then what does God the Mother do for you? God the Mother grows you. Then does God the Mother grow you. That's what that last sentence says. Make you more than you were. Okay? This is the Father and the Mother. And they're showing you how they work together. It starts with the consecration of will. It starts with the relationship to the initiator. If you relate yourself to the initiator, guess what? You're initiated. Okay? But then you have to relate yourself to the actuality of the finite. You know, you have to be more than just potential. The upholder upholds actuality. Remember, you took the potentialities and actualized them into the Almighty, and the upholder upholds those actualities and then helps to realize those actualities. You have the actualization and then the realization, like we were talking about a little bit ago, those two steps to it. It's the same way here. Okay? Father initiates, but that initiation is a potentialization. Now you have to consecrate yourself to actualizing those potentials. And what do those actualities look like? They look like the Supreme. In the midst of a lot of stuff that isn't, again, directly using the word mother, you can see it's everywhere. This is what they want you to see in this. Why in the world did they bring the ancients of the days and reflectivity into that? It seems like a non sequitur. It's only if you have begun to get this whole picture together about the mother. It's like, well, I know why that's there because, blah, blah, blah. You know its relationship in the whole context of the mother aspect of reality. And so you can begin to immediately understand why they say the things they do, when they do, why they say them the way they do, why they didn't say Father three times. Why did they switch to God? All these things. You can answer those questions once you know that you've got these two parts and you're just always looking for, that's talking about this part and that's talking about this part. It's all just very obvious once you know there's the two parts, the existential part and the experiential part, the Father part and the Mother part.
The word italicized here, has, makes me think of the lady that was anointing Jesus.
Yep.
It's all she had.
Yep.
She gave everything.
I'm glad you mentioned that.
Good one.
Yeah, and I'm really glad you brought that up because I wanted to stress that. Why did the italicized has? Well, you can see a lot of reasons. But most literally, they're trying to remind you not what you think you have, but what you actually have. What do you actually have free will control over? Not a lot. Okay? What do you actually have? You have this mind, this mindful self, that you have been given free will to control if you choose. I can't control that, that self or that one.
That's for sure.
But I have been given the opportunity to control this self. And if I control this self, I make that self part of eternity. If I don't, I become as if I had never been.
And that even holds for your spouse, right?
Yeah, right.
See, all I have is myself. The literal mindal energy I don't have. The little spirit energy that I'm, the Holy Spirit, spiritual truth, I don't have those things. All I have is myself. That's all I actually have. And free will choice to control it or not, to consecrate it to eternity or not. That's all I actually have.
Not now, but in the future time. Mm-hmm. Difference between self and soul.
Yep. Mortal self. Potentially immortal self. All right. So the next section is tied right into this, building on this. They're trying to get a crescendo before section 6, where we actually use, the designation God the Mother. You'll see it. There's no way to cover these two sections, in one night. But you'll see how linked together this next section is. Just basically taking all the things that they started here and just making them even more, driven home to the point. All right, let's take a moment.